Hey, On the Call listeners, this is Jeremy Neff, and I'm here with my colleague Pam Leist. We'll get to the episode soon, but we want to share a quick announcement first.
Jeremy and I are excited to share that we will once again be speaking at the LRP National Institute, this time in Savannah, Georgia, on May 5th through the 8th. Conference is really a fantastic opportunity for school education professionals like yourselves to come together and share insights and knowledge. Jeremy and I are honored to be speaking at the National Conference for the third year in a row. My session is Can You Keep a Secret? Navigating Confidentiality Under IDEA, 504, and FERPA. I'll be sharing practical tips for keeping your teams compliant with these laws.
After leading a session for school attorneys on lessons learned from COVID, my topic for the National Institute is successfully mapping the exit from IDEA services. I'll discuss the different ways a student ends eligibility and how to ensure that's a successful transition.
These sessions promise to be insightful and practical as always, and we always offer actionable takeaways you can implement in your schools. If you want to learn more about the National Institute, you can find a link in the show notes for the newest On the Call episode, or go to lrpinstitute.com.
Pam and I hope to see you there in Savannah. Until then, enjoy this episode of On the Call.
Good afternoon, this is Erin.
Hi, Erin. I hate to bother you, but I need to run a situation by you.
Anytime. What's up?
Well, we had a manifestation recently where the team determined that the behavior, a physical assault of staff, was not a manifestation of the student's disability. So now the kid is expelled and out of school.
Oosh.
Yeah. The parents now, of course, are calling irate that their student is expelled and not getting services. Before I call them back, could you walk me through my options?
Absolutely. Welcome to On the Call, Ennis Britton Special Education Team Podcast. I am Erin Westendorf-Fortman.
And I am Jeremy Neff.
And we are ready to dig into this call. So I think it's not surprising necessarily if we look at that phone call to say, why is a parent upset, right? We've done our MDR process. The behavior was not a manifestation of a student's disability, so a student is rightfully disciplined. They're treated like any other typical kid. But I think where the miss is on this, right, is the fact that just because they're treated like a typical kid doesn't mean that they don't also now receive services on the other side while they're being treated like a typical kid.
Yeah, absolutely. And this goes to the fundamental nature of IDEA. IDEA is, you know, we sometimes describe it as it's not an anti-discrimination law. That's 504. IDEA is more, it has affirmative requirements. We're building up. We're setting goals and working towards them. And that doesn't turn off just because a kid engaged in stupid conduct.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? But I'm totally joking about that. But I do think it's at least a good reminder. So if we, as we've done in all of these podcasts, we sort of focus first thing as we do on the phone calls when they come in is what does the law require first?
Yeah.
And then knowing that every situation, the law doesn't always fit neatly into it or the situation's neatly into the law. But at least in terms of the black letter law for this, and everyone knows, we have the ability to do our FAPE-free zone, right? Mm-hmm. Our first 10 days, not of each individual student disciplinary incident, but you get 10 days each school year for a kiddo that are FAPE-free. So you can discipline them for up to 10 days, whether it's over an entire school year, 3 days here, 2 days here, 1 day there. You get FAPE-free. But once you reach day 11, you need to be providing services for that student when they're out based on student disciplinary conduct.
Yeah, and there's, much like so many things with IDEA, there's a process that we go through to determine what those services would look like. So again, we're working with the child where it's not a manifestation. We're getting past the 10 days. What happens on day 11? Well, it's called an interim alternative educational setting. Throughout this podcast, we may revert to IAES. And what it is a set of services that are going to allow two things. It allows the child to participate, and that's the magic word, participate in the general education curriculum. And the second thing is it allows the child to progress. Again, there's a magic word there, progress on IEP goals. So it needs to accomplish those two things, but it need not be what's in the IEP. And in fact, very, very, very rarely would it be what's precisely in the IEP for that child.
So wait a minute. General education curriculum. What?
Right.
A lot of times we get, so I did what was in the IEP. I provided the OT, the PT, the SLP. I had the reading instruction. You mean to tell me that I also have to do more or less like a home instruction that may or may not be provided in the home for general education too?
Right. Yeah. It sometimes gets overlooked because, you know, we think of IDEA as being so focused on what's in that document. And that document does not describe how we're going to handle everything with Gen Ed, but it is absolutely a part of this IAES.
So as a part of the IAES, can we then say, and I know I feel like I'm asking you more questions with this podcast anyway, so I apologize, but we often get the phone calls then. So, okay, I'll do what's required in statute, right, for when kids are absent 5 hours a week. Gen Ed, done, right? I mean, that I'm clear.
Yeah, there's a little quirk in Ohio law there, right? And this is a quirk that's gotten even quirkier now that we've moved from measuring school years by days to measuring them by hours. But an old law, kind of a relic of the past, said that we could count a child as being in attendance and therefore get the funding for the child if they received 1 hour of home instruction for every school day. So that really doesn't have any bearing on these decisions about IAES, even though it clearly in the real world does.
Well, and I think it could also serve as your base, mm-hmm. right? And so when looking at that from a base, I think where sometimes we maybe miss the target or haven't focused in on what does the black letter law actually say, right? So there's a case that came out of South Dakota, and it was recently where a student was removed for discipline and out 10 days with a rec for expulsion upheld. They held an MDR, found that the conduct in question was not, you know, substantially related and directly related to the student's disability. So out the student goes. And student is served while out. So problem being, why all of a sudden are parents fighting, except for maybe they're upset that the student is also out. The problem was based on, and this was a state complaint, so it did not go to an IHO, did not go to due process. State complaint said essentially, we are mad, we wanted more services. And the State Department of Education said at this point in time, well, you're right. You needed to have an IEP team discussion to talk about what those services were going to be while the student was out under discipline. And so in this case, the assistant principal had unilaterally decided, at least based on the facts as, you know, we have available to us, he had unilaterally decided what services the student would receive. And so that State Department of Ed, not Ohio, mind you, but it was Missouri, this State Department of Ed said, hey, the IEP team needed to have a meeting. Could have been at the end of the MDR meeting to talk about what services would be appropriate during that suspension. So talking about what would have allowed the child to continue to participate in Gen Ed and to progress towards meeting the goals outlined in their IEP.
Yeah, and if the facts of this sound familiar, it's because we encounter this all the time. But we promise, no clients were harmed in the recording of this podcast. This is from a different state, but it's a common story. And sometimes it's not the principal. It might be the superintendent at the end of the expulsion hearing saying, hey, this is what I'm going to do for your kid. And it feels good, right? I mean, it sounds like you're helping the family, and you are. It's just not following the process that needs to happen, and that's going to run us into trouble. Before we dive into some practical tips and further discussion about this case, I want to step back to black letter law.
Okay.
So this is the common scenario where there are fights, right? It has to do with a child where it was not a manifestation and that realization for the parent, wow, this child's out for 80 days or whatever it may be. But there's also the scenario, and there is black letter law for, well, what do we do if it is a manifestation? Because it's not as simple as you think, well, you put the kid back in school. Well, that's not the end of the requirements. So if we've gone through the manifestation process and concluded that it is a manifestation of the child's disability, yes, we put the child back in their last agreed upon setting, what's in the IEP. But we also then need to look at conducting a functional behavior assessment and developing a BIP, a behavior intervention plan, or if we've done those things already, revisiting them, because we don't want behavior that is a manifestation of the child's disability interfering with their access to education. I feel like that's more straightforward, so I don't really want to dwell on it too much, but I did want to highlight that there are requirements that other direction as well.
I feel like it is, but I also feel like there are definite misses that we can have as schools when we have said it is a manifestation of your disability, right? And then we go, okay, now you're back in school. We either conduct an FBA or a BIP, or we review and revisit. But then when we review and we revisit, we're like, we don't need to make any changes. Well, that doesn't work. Or if we did make changes, documenting what those changes are, All right, making sure that that prior written notice, and I feel like in every one of these episodes, we have to go ahead and say prior written notice 1,000 times. But to me, they're the key to everything, because if we didn't document it in a prior written notice, it didn't happen. And we're seeing very clearly from the Ohio Department of Education and the U.S. Department of Education, that's where they look first. Mm-hmm. And so to me, those are sort of my key to everything.
Well, as a mug I saw on a client's desk once said, keep calm and send a prior written notice.
I mean, yes, but make sure it's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, maybe that's a whole other podcast episode to say, how do we do prior written notices that are good? But I do think having that conversation, because if we don't amend the behavior plan, let's say there is one and it is a manifestation, we don't amend it, and we're right back to the table again, then we look like we're disciplining a student based on their disability, and we can't keep doing that.
And the child's not receiving FAPE. I mean, we have to keep that in mind. The reason this requirement's there for the kids where it's a manifestation, it's not as simple as just throw them back in, is because if I'm tearing the classroom apart, I'm not learning. Like those two things are not well, I may be learning something, but not what I should be. So, you know, keep in mind, this goes fundamentally to FAPE. So you're right. It's worth emphasizing.
I do really think it's important in that. But in terms of then, so I guess the grand summary of this, if we talk broad level practical points, right, it's really, so we've done the MDR, now what, right? I mean, we've gone through, have the FBA done, have the BIP, return the kid to the placement. That may mean a broader level discussion with staff who might not be so happy after a kid has destroyed the classroom for the 10th time. I mean, just being honest, that the kid is coming back. But talking to staff, talking to teachers, educational aides about what new services and supports that may mean for a kiddo. There may be opportunities as well. Yes, return the child to the classroom. But hey, parents, is there an option to have a discussion about it? It may take us a few days to get this in place for your child. What can we do in the interim, right? Just to be able to problem solve our way through this. It's not to deny FAPE to a child. It's to say, we want to make sure we can fully appropriately support them. How do we wrap our hands around them in an appropriate manner, in that fashion, as you roll your eyes at me. It's totally fine. But I also think, you know, making sure in those aspects, everyone in that team understands what the requirements then are of that IEP and that behavior plan, right? Coming, if the kid is being returned, they need to follow that. They can't just say, whoop, I'm done now, because we're going to be right back in the same boat.
Yeah, and the vast majority of educators, they're right there. And I'll pick on, as a former high school teacher, I'll pick on like the high school folks. Maybe they're done with a kid. And frankly, the behavior can be more dangerous or disruptive at that age. So if that's where we're at, all the more reason we need our staff to be implementing with absolute fidelity, because in addition to what you just described, trying to make sure the kid's back in, successfully transitioning, we may be looking toward a change of placement. That's what we want, and the family's not there yet. Well, the way we get there is we shorten the playing field. And the manifestation process, the FBA and the BIP after that, when we've concluded it is a manifestation, those are ways for us to kind of shorten the playing field and make that transition from the regular high school setting to some sort of outplacement potentially seem less jarring, because we can show we've worked our way there. And while it's highly unusual, if we get to the point where we say we need to file due process to force a change of placement, we're going to be in a much more defensible position. We can show that evolution over time.
No, I think that's a great point in showing that process for how we get there, right? And that we've done everything in our capacity, within our power, within this placement, with what can we can serve here to be able to serve that student. And so then on the flip side of that, you know, so we did the MDR, now what? The flip side is what we talked about, sort of to open the podcast with the phone call with, we are providing services. So in the event, on the flip side, it's not a manifestation. And so we are able to discipline a kid just like any other typical child. We are helping the kid make progress in the general education curriculum, and or at least have access to the general education curriculum, make progress towards their IEP goals. And I do want to at least highlight that I do think this is going to be an interesting focus, because OSEP came out this past July of 22 with new, you know, Q&A. I love them. They're very long. But they even highlighted that this is an IEP team decision on what that individualized determination is for services. So it's not, we do this for all kids. Here's your 5 hours. Here's what's in your IEP. That might not necessarily be appropriate. And necessarily, you might also not be providing what's in the IEP, because Section 7 might have small group services, you know, all of those things, you need to at least be documenting in a prior written how you're going to be doing that differently.
So from a practical perspective, then, that decision, thoughts on when it makes sense to have that discussion as a team?
Well, I think it depends on how the outline happens with your MDR meeting, right? If you're holding the MDR on day 10 and you've said, hey, by the way, it's not a, you, the team has determined it is not a manifestation of the student's disability. Let's assume parents disagree, because let's just make that assumption. You need to be providing services day 11. Now, if you cannot or do not, because you want to have that meeting on the tail end of that MDR, parents don't agree, parents leave in a huff, whatever it is, you can move it out. But as a district, you're going to be needing to provide compensatory education for the time period missed, assuming we're at day 11 now. We've determined it's not a manifestation. We need to be giving services, and we didn't. And so what that combat will look like.
Yeah, when we've got the team assembled at that MDR, that's a great time, right, to do it if we can. But you're right, it can be tense at the end of those meetings. And there's nothing wrong with, if you go through the discussion as a team, even if the family has walked out, stormed out in a huff, have the discussion, document it, and offer in that same PRO1, hey, we'd like to reconvene with your participation. Or, frankly, if you've developed an IAES and it just doesn't seem to be working well, it makes sense to reconvene, offer to reopen that decision for further discussion.
Yeah. No, I think it's a really good point on that. Even offering can help us. The parent participation piece of it, I think, is important. And having that discussion and offering to constantly come back to that table with the parents is an important piece. But I do think, as with all of these, you know, discussions on MDRs, there are 1,000 rabbit holes that we could go down through this. And trying to stay, for purposes of this discussion, broad level, and to get everybody thinking about how we best serve students and how to make sure we're compliant with the law, I think, is the focus of where we go.
Yeah. So other thoughts on practical tips as we wind this down? I mean, we always mention training. So I
training guess and prior written notices.
Training and prior written notices. So those are my final thoughts as we wrap this up.
No, I don't think I have anything else.
That's it for this episode. Thank you for joining us. A quick note, this podcast is intended to be used for general information only and is not legal advice. If you have a specific question, please consult an attorney.
Be sure to check out other episodes at ennisbritton.com or wherever you find your podcasts.
If you have a topic you would like to suggest, a question about today's episode, or anything else you'd like to share, please email us at podcast@ennisbritton.com. Whether by phone or this podcast, we look forward to being on the call with you again soon.